Before this episode begins, we would like to address that we talk about some very traumatic events that happened to us late last year as to the reason why we had to take a long break. If this sort of thing bothers you, you may want to skip ahead just a little bit. Thank you for understanding, and now the episode begins. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Measuring the Score podcast, the podcast where we offer our opinions on film scores and the films they're inspired by. I'm Chris.
And I'm Leslie.
Let's get started. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Measuring the Score. We're back, Leslie.
I know. I can't believe it. It feels surreal.
I know. It's been a while.
It has.
We've missed everyone, and we've been posting on social media and everything else. We're going to talk about why we had to take such a long break. I guess I'll start it off with like this. Leslie and I have been trying to have children for 10 years. No lie. It's taken that long. So May of last year, we were very excited and happy that we had signs that, you know, we were going to have a child. And unfortunately, some things happened and it just didn't happen. We lost that opportunity, but
I had a miscarriage.
Yes, Leslie had a miscarriage, and we needed to take a break from that.
It was traumatic and it was sad.
Yeah.
Considering you know the length of time that we have been trying to have children. So shortly after that, we went to a fertility doctor because you know I am older. I'm 40.
Yep.
And for him to tell me that I'm just old and can't have children. And we eventually got pregnant.
Yep. During our break, we were blessed once again to become pregnant. And I hate to use this term, but this one stuck.
Ha ha.
Little Mia, our new co-host, was brought into the world on March 4th. She was due April 14th. So that's the reason why we were taking a break because of the miscarriage. And then during that break, Leslie became pregnant and there was a lot of complications and things going on, so we couldn't really come back.
I stayed sick most of my pregnancy, and then there at the end, I developed preeclampsia,
yeah,
which is very serious. My blood pressure skyrocketed through the roof. Mia was in distress. Long story short, I had a C-section 6 weeks before she was due.
Right.
And now we have our little munchkin.
Yes, our new little co-host. So I'm going to say this now at the start of every season. At the start of this season, I should say. If you hear little noises, little breathing, some crying in the background or something like that.
She's a newborn.
That's Mia. Maybe when she becomes older and she can talk, maybe we'll have her on the show and everything else. But, you know. And also, if things sound a little weird, we're having to record a lot differently than we normally do. So, We're actually laying in our bed.
Trying to accommodate Mia.
Yep. We've got her asleep right now, so hopefully she stays like that through the whole episode.
She had her bath time. She's been fed. She's asleep right now.
I don't know how this is going to work.
Right?
So, with that out of the way, that's why we had to take such a long break. But we do have some very exciting things planned for this season. One of the things I do want to talk about, normally at the end of every season, we do bonus episodes. What we did at the end of first season, we didn't get to do it for the second season because we had some problems. Normally what we do at the end of every season is we have bonus episodes and where they're holiday themed, Well, this season, we're going to do something a little different. We've been teasing it for a while now. We are finally going to do Measuring the High Score, where we talk about video games and the video game music and everything else. So that's going to be in the place of our bonus episodes. It's going to be on the Measuring the Score page. You don't have to subscribe to a whole new podcast. Don't worry about that. I'll post when we have more details and everything else. I have a logo. It's going to be great. And, well, first, I guess we can talk about, well, Leslie, what soundtracks have you been listening to?
You shouldn't ask me that question. I promised, guys, this time I have listened to some soundtracks, and they were pretty good. Oh, The Ninth Gate. I've been listening to The Ninth Gate, which is okay. An older film. I think, was it early 2000s that it came out? 1999-ish, I guess. Mm-hmm. I was still in high school, so it was around that time frame, I think, it came out. Score was pretty intense in places. It kind of reminded me of Saint Saens and some of his work. I really enjoyed it.
Okay.
And I listened to The Mask of Zorro as well, which is another older score.
That was James Horner, right?
Yes, of course. Okay. You know, my proclivity to James Horner. I just love him.
I listened to the Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 score. Now, that was a little different because Volume 1 and 2 were by Tyler Bates. So he had, like, a, you know, his own style and everything else. This one was done by John Murphy, who did a film called Armor. He's done the 28 Days Later.
That's right.
Yeah.
He did horror movies.
Yeah, he did Sunshine. Yeah. He worked a lot with Danny Boyle, who did 28 Days Later, Trainspotting, stuff like that. And so it was very different to hear, you know, John Murphy's take on this. And throughout the whole score, I kept thinking, well, is he going to use Tyler Bates' original theme? Is he going to, you know, is he going to incorporate that somehow? And I only heard it one time, which is a little odd. I wonder if in the film it's in there more. But I did notice that when I did hear it, it was very minimal. It had a very simple feel to it. It wasn't as big and grand as what Tyler had done for Volume 1 and 2. So it was a little odd to hear it. And it was, from what I'm hearing, it's a very emotional movie. And you could tell that with the score, too. But, of course, with John Murphy, it was, you know, a lot of guitars, a lot more guitars in there than what Tyler had done.
Well, you know, it's also a conclusion to that trilogy.
Right.
So, of course, it's going to be a little bit different, and it's probably somber.
Right. We haven't seen it yet. Like we just said, we have a kid. That's going to be a while.
Is it out?
It's out.
Really?
Yep. Just like we haven't seen the Mario movie yet, but I hear that's going to be streaming next week.
Fantastic.
Well, the week that this episode will premiere.
Okay.
So, yeah. Should be interesting. Yeah. So, today, we're going to be talking about National Treasure. Now, should I say that this is my favorite film? Because I'm like, pretty much every time we start an episode,
we've discussed this before. You really like heist films, and this is like the ultimate heist film.
No, it's not the ultimate heist film. It's more Indiana Jones.
Yeah, I don't think so. No.
No, it is. All right. So, a poll. Who agrees with me? Is it more action-adventure, Indiana Jones, or is it heist? So, let us know in the comments, on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, wherever. Wherever you listen to your podcast.
Interwebs.
Interwebs, yes.
The interwebs.
Now, with this score, I had it. I still have it. I have it on CD.
Old man.
I know. Never thought I would get to the point where it's like, oh, I have it on CD. And people are like,
look, guys, he still has his flip CD case that's got all the little plastic pages in it.
I still rock
it
that
looks
thing.
Like a phone book. He opens it up.
I rock that thing, man. I am not gonna lie about it. It's great. It's got all my score and soundtracks.
As I look over to our desk over there and see my CD disc man.
All right, so I used to listen to it a lot. It was one of those like go-to soundtracks. It would just pop it in because the first track, the National Treasure Suite, you know, you get the piano, the kind of mysterious piano coming in there with the guitar. It's like a guitar synth where it's not playing like a full note. It's a little weird, but I really liked that part, and that the, you know, the orchestra comes in. But the thing about this orchestra, it does not sound real. It sounds very, very synthesized.
So, yeah, that's actually a little bit further in my notes. It's really deceiving, because when you listen to the score, which I know we're jumping ahead, but when you listen to the score, it sounds mostly synth. The orchestra kind of gets lost in the drum riffs, the guitars. You will hear a piano every now and then. But from the trivia that I was reading, the score was actually recorded with a full orchestra.
Really?
Yes, he used a full orchestra, and you can't hear it over all the synthesized elements that they've added to the score. So it's deceiving. It's really deceptive.
I am very shocked by that, because there are a lot of moments in there where it sounded very synth.
It did.
I mean, especially the opening part, the National Treasure Suite on the soundtrack version.
Because he added all of that stuff.
Oh, man. Yeah. No, I mean, there are a lot of moments, like with I guess it's the full theme or Ben's theme, where Nicolas Cage is riding through on the snowplow and everything else, and you get the full patriotic theme come in. Now, that sounds like a real orchestra, but the National Treasure Suite, I could have swore that was all synth.
That was the trivia that I read. So, National Treasure, this score here, was released in 2004. It grossed $347.5 million at the box office.
Wow.
The original rough cut of the film was 4 hours long. Can you imagine editing 4 hours worth of film?
Considering I'm editing I don't even know how long the movie is. I made a film on my paternity leave, and I'm attempting to edit that right now. And how much of a pain in the butt that is, I cannot imagine. But, you know, people get paid tons of money to do that. Yeah. Oh, my God.
And fun fact, it is one of the only films that Sean Bean's character does not die.
That was great.
That's right? Yeah. I've always known him to play as a bad guy, and I've always known him to die.
Yeah, because I am so sorry if I get his name wrong. Wasn't he Boromir in Lord of the Rings?
Yes. And yes. I think you got his name wrong.
Did I? I don't think I did. I'm going to look this up.
I don't think it's pronounced that way.
Well, I'm going to find out.
Oh, okay. You let you Google it.
All right, I'm gonna Google it.
So, another trivia piece that that we have is that the names Ben Patrick and John Gates.
Ooh, it is Boromir. B O R O M I R, Boromir.
So you had to interrupt me.
Yes, I did.
To correct me. You are not right, sir.
We haven't done this in a while.
That's Something's funny. Wrong with you. Anyway, Ben Patrick and John Gates' characters, they were named after actual founding fathers, Benjamin Franklin, of course, Patrick Henry, and John Adams.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Now, the National Treasure series, it went on to... keep going. There's a TV show, which we'll talk about that later on. The movie, though, when I remember seeing the trailer for it when it was announced and everything else, it was like, wait, what? Nicolas Cage is Indiana Jones? Like, what's going on? That's what it looked like. It really looked like. But the way they set it up was the whole mystery of, you know, the founding fathers and everything else. That was what really intrigued me. That was the one thing, like, you know, the eye of the pyramid. He was like, oh, that we're going to explain that and everything.
Oh, the Freemasons.
Else. Yeah, yeah. And that was just crazy. That was really cool at the time. I remember seeing that. Then it was like Nicolas Cage. I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah, see, that time period is a blur for me because I was going through a geology program and I hadn't graduated yet. And so I was in school. I don't even remember. 2002 to 2006 is kind of blurry in there for me.
All right, so the you want to, let's get to the score.
Sure.
All right. So
Chris just wants, he's like, let's get this over.
Yeah, I want to get to the score. Now, the score was written by Trevor Rabin. There also found out there was some additional music by a gentleman by the name of Paul Linford, who went on to work with Trevor again on the National Treasure TV show.
And didn't Trevor also work with Hans Zimmer? Wasn't he from one of his
groups? Yeah, so that was a part of Hans Zimmer's group. I cannot remember the name of the company. But
so how does that work when you work with like Hans Zimmer or one of the bigger composers?
So with this, it was around the time it was the Jerry Bruckheimer sound. It was the big action films, and it was the short note, like Bad Boys, you know, the short note motif and everything else. And it was around that time Hans Zimmer was gathering all these composers together. So it was basically, they were just working out of one company, and it was a lot of Jerry Bruckheimer films, but they would just, you know, like, okay, well, this person, you know, what we get, they would come to this company and say like, hey, I've got this film. Okay, well, this composer can work on it. Or this guy can work on it. Or this guy can work on it.
So they just like piecemeal it and say, hey, I need you to work on these time codes. I need you to work on these time codes.
Well, not really piecemeal it, but it would be like, say, Hans Zimmer's working on one movie. And then Jerry Bruckheimer comes and says, hey, we got this action film. It's called National Treasure. Oh, well, Trevor Rabin will be good for it. You know, let's get Trevor. Hey, Trevor, let's do it. And that's how they scored Pirates of the Caribbean. It was the entire army of those composers. Like, Trevor Rabin, he did guitars on the second Pirates of the Caribbean film. So that's how they all met. And it was like Trevor also worked with Mark Mancina on Twister because they were friends. You know, and that's how it worked with these people. And Trevor was really known for like Armageddon. He worked on Con Air with Mark Mancina.
Con Air, also Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, exactly. And that, I want to say he may have worked a little bit on The Rock as well.
Ooh, I hadn't seen that one in forever.
Oh, that was a good film. But yeah, and, you know, Trevor, I really loved his work, especially for Deep Blue Sea. That is a really great score by him. It has the simple piano motif, like Jaws. It's like a simple four-note motif, or it's probably more than that, but it was just the way it is, a simple motif. Big, huge orchestra, and you can tell it's an orchestra, not that it sounds synthesized, but it has like a lot of action moments in the score. I thought it was really fun. Now I'm going to have to go back and listen to it. But just, like I said from earlier, just with the start of this soundtrack, that's what I heard online, and that's what drew me in for this film. I was like, I've got to get that score. That's when I had to order the CD for it, because I love that opening track with the guitars.
So I want to preface this. I like the score. So it's hard, and I've said this before in a few of our earlier episodes. It is hard when you like something, or like the score rather, and you have to start to critique it in a different way.
Right.
So, you know, we've talked about our process on this show before. We listen to the score, and then we compare it to the movie to see if it works, you know, and we have our three criteria that we normally, you know, rate the score on. So for me, liking the score, you know, I had to kind of put that in the back of my mind when I started to listen to it. So my first impression, as Chris mentioned, it sounded like it wasn't a traditional orchestra. You had the orchestration pieces in there. I heard some pianos, and then I heard heavy synth. And the synthesized sound kind of carried throughout until you got to the patriotic pieces, which, you know, he did a really good job. Sounds like America, you know, very, very patriotic. But it was a mixture to me.
Nothing against our international listeners.
No, nothing. So, that being said, I noticed that there was some instances where the transitions in the pieces were a bit rough. And when I mean transitions, are the transitions between the instruments and the synthesizers. They kind of, he had the instrumentation going and playing, and then bam, synthesized. So, you know, that was kind of rough in my mind. It didn't flow. You know, I like continuity in my scores, and I've talked about this before, and I like continuity amongst the pieces, and there are some pieces that seemed rough also to me.
Well, going back and listening, like a lot of the drum hits and synthesized beats in the background and everything else, some of them sound a little rough now. Back then, it was really cool. I like, you know, the style back then, but, you know, the beats just, to me, kind of work, but then at the same time, they don't. Sometimes they're a little bigger than maybe they should be. And this is just judging on the score it's on its own. But I still love the guitar, you know, coming in there at the very beginning, you know, the very short riff notes. I love that. And of course, you know, I love the big orchestral theme where he says, you know, America. it sounds really good, though. It has a great sound to it. It has a nice flow. I love the notation. I love the theme itself and how it, you know, the piano and that note there does play out throughout the rest of the score. That is nice. There is some continuity there. But as far as continuity and transitions between the instruments, it is a little rough. Is there a specific track you want to talk about?
So, you know, I always talk about either a specific track or a specific motif. Well, there are two tracks that I would like to talk about. And it's actually the very first piece, the National Treasure Suite. Because at the very beginning, to me, in my mind, it was reminiscent of Unsolved Mysteries. The music was like, that's very Unsolved Mysteries-like. I don't know if he was like...
Well, it's almost a fantasy mystery element to it. Maybe that's where
I don't know, because Unsolved Mysteries was the creepiest movie of all time. Scared the crap out of me as a kid.
Oh, no, creepiest TV show.
No, the music was creepy.
No, you said creepiest movie of all time.
Did I say? No, I said music, I thought.
I don't know.
I don't know what I said. I have mom brain. I'm sorry. Anyway.
And we're tired, too. Right? I'll admit that.
But it had that Unsolved Mysteries feeling throughout that first piece, in my opinion.
I can almost guess what the next track is we're going to talk about.
Interrogation.
Yeah, there it is.
So, Interrogation, I'm going to put it as simple as possible. It reminded me of a soup pot. And you start adding your water and your stuff you want to make your soup with, you know, some onions. And then all of a sudden you just dump a whole bunch of garbage in there and let it boil.
So, listening.
That's how the sound to me.
Listening to this track, I'm listening to it and I'm like, okay, it's starting off pretty good. And then the percussion comes in there and it just goes just crazy. Bonkers. It really does. It's like, whoa, it's too much. So I'm listening to this going, okay, well, maybe it's going to work for the film. Maybe when I watch the film, it's going to be a little bit different. It won't be as bad then. But, you know, listening to it on its own, it is way too much going on. It just really is. And I mean, I'm guilty of it myself as a composer. I've done stuff like this before. I've added too much in there.
Well,
just,
you know,
just mainly because you're trying to convey the craziness. You're trying to convey the chaos that's happening.
It starts off with the main motif and it's slow, right? And it starts to build and I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm getting into this. And then all of a sudden it's just, okay, let's add all of this in the kitchen sink and we're going to add the bathtub, you know, let's throw this tiny dog in there. I mean, it went crazy and it was too many sounds and it was too fast paced in my opinion.
It was.
Just even listening to it on its
own. It wasn't enjoyable to listen to.
No, it was not.
I mean, and there, now keep in mind there are, I understand this is for a film and it's trying to, you know, follow the scene and everything else. At the same time, you want it to still be enjoyable to listen to. And you can have chaos, but it's still enjoyable.
Yeah, no, I didn't like it.
And yeah, not with this one. But overall, the rest of the score, like the chase, foot chase, you know, those were really fun to listen to.
Yeah, you know, we've covered a few scores. Granted, you know, this is season 3. So yeah, we've covered a few scores. And, you know, when I think of chaos, I think of The Mummy, because you've got the chaotic elements there and how, you know, he handled that. And it still was kind of eloquently done.
Bad Boys, for example.
Bad Boys.
Mark Mancina, which I'm pretty sure Trevor Rabin worked on. Mark Mancina did a great job of conveying the chaos, especially with the Porsche chase.
Right.
Score cue. I mean, I thought that was really well done. You know, and there was a lot of chaos going on. I mean, it was Michael Bay, for crying out loud.
Explosions.
Well, it was Michael Bay, subtle, because it was his first film.
Tiny so, explosions.
But with this, it was like, with this one track in particular, it was too much. It was just way too much. And, I mean, but the rest of the tracks were very enjoyable to listen to. One of the tracks I really liked was the preparation montage. Thought that was pretty cool because it just showcased the technology. You could tell that was just they're planning something, and it's kind of fun. I like that one. That one was pretty cool. Aside from the National Treasure Suite.
Aside from the main motif.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was pretty cool. So,
you know, our next part, which, you know, we haven't recorded in a while, we start talking about the movie.
Yep.
And
This was hard because I really like this movie.
We like the movie. You know, we've mentioned this before. We're going to have a few films this go around that we really like. It's going to be hard for us. So we're trying not to be partial.
So, all right. Before we start talking about the score with the film, now, just watching the film on its own, was it hard to take the nostalgia glasses off and just, you know, critique the film? Or were you watching it, were you still like, you know, the goofy grin, like, this is still fun?
No. I don't know what's happened in my brain. I don't know if it's this pregnancy that I, you know, just got out of. But I started watching it, and I'm like, this is such a fast-paced film. This is intense throughout. There's, like, no moment of rest.
Honestly,
that was the first thing I noticed.
I agree with you. It was a very fast-moving movie.
Maybe it was because I'm so tired. I don't know. But I'm just like, they don't rest.
Well, one thing that really gets me, though, is that it was Walt Disney. It was Walt Disney Pictures. Because I think, from what I read in the trivia, it was originally supposed to be through Touchstone Pictures. But when they figured out it was more family-friendly, Walt Disney picked it up and released it. And that's when it started a string of Walt Disney, Jerry Bruckheimer films. You know, and actually, I think that started with Pirates of the Caribbean, maybe. Either way, it was working out a lot because the same creative team here went on to work with make National Treasure, Book of Secrets, The Sorcerer's Apprentice.
I like The Sorcerer's Apprentice.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, but there was a lot of controversy on that set. We'll talk about that because we may cover that one day. But no, it was still a fun movie.
I didn't say it wasn't fun. I still enjoyed it.
It was very fast. It's still fast paced, but it was still such a fun movie.
This is real fast paced.
Yeah. Now, you said it when we were watching it.
So at the very beginning, you know, you see him tell the story.
Yeah,
to
you got
his
Chris. What's
child. His,
Christopher Plummer?
Right. He's telling the story of the treasure, and I
still
then
want that chair.
The score is very subtle there.
There's a scene in there at the very beginning where the kid is pulling his chair back just so it's like a step stool.
Oh, that one.
I remember when I saw that, I was like, I want that chair. I want that chair.
I need it for my office for no reason.
Yeah, exactly. And then that's what happened when we were watching it. And Liz is, oh, that's so cool. And I was like, yes.
Right?
I was like, I want that.
My grandma had something similar she got it in the 60s, but it was like a sit down stool, but it converted into a step stool.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah. I remember it was yellow. It used to sit in the corner. Us little kids could fit on it. We'd sit on it. We'd go see grandma.
So the movie begins with Christopher Plummer telling young Nicolas Cage's character, Ben, the story of the family gates, of how they know about this treasure from Charles Carroll. And, you know, it keeps going and you get glimpses of John Voight with a terrible wig.
Oh, yeah. And a younger sounding voice.
Yeah.
Like, how did they
do
that?
No, it wasn't younger sounding.
It was just kind of younger sounding. I don't know if it's how he articulated.
I think it was the way he articulated.
But we're just like, what?
Yeah.
Before CGI, you know, they start doing all that face changing stuff.
So it was kind of fun. And then the movie opens with Nicholas. You get to see the adult version of Ben, which is Nicolas Cage in the snowplow.
Right. It's
a
snowy scene, and you see these snowplows going. They're in the middle of nowhere.
And you get introduced to Sean Bean's character, Ian, and then you get introduced to the comic relief, Riley. And that's Mia over there making noises. And that's when you get the big patriotic, you know, sounding theme. And
so it's Nicolas Cage, you know, trying to find the Charlotte, and to me, it was very curious of why they were using metal detectors.
Because there's metal on the boat somewhere.
Right. Anyway, they use the metal detectors to find his huge boat, Charlotte. They end up finding it because Nicolas Cage gets in the snow and he starts digging. And there's so
this
the bell.
This is where
I had a problem.
Yeah, this is where I had a problem too, because it was the National Treasure, and it's the awesome guitar riff that I was talking about. I really like comes into play, and it's so out of place.
It's out of place, and it's like blasting you instead of building up to that moment. You know, like building suspense or building. No, it's just like all of a sudden and there, right in your face.
So the problem, I think it would have worked better if it was just the guitars. No, there's synthesized beats or nothing. Just guitars with the orchestra coming in there. Maybe it would have worked better, but he's got like these synthesized beats coming in there, and it just didn't work to me, you know. And you said the same thing. It was like it sounded really off. It didn't fit the scene at all.
Yeah, it didn't fit the scene at all. No.
And there was other moments like that where those synthesized beats would come in there, and it was just it was too much for the scene.
So, you know, at the very beginning, as I mentioned, it was really subtle, especially when he's telling the story of the treasure. Real subtle. And then, you know, you've got that offsetting motif that comes in when Nicolas Cage is, you know, finding the bell there that says Charlotte on it. And then it was just like nonstop action-packed, you know, music from him stealing the Declaration of Independence onward.
Yeah.
It didn't let up. It's like full throttle. But I feel like the music done that way in the movie kind of helped pace it along a lot better, because there was so much going on. I feel like the pacing, it could have easily dragged.
Yeah.
If it wasn't done right. And I think the music helped move the movie along where it didn't drag, and it seemed like it was proportioned, you know, correctly.
Yeah, I'll give you that. Now, there was another scene in particular that popped in my head. The interrogation scene, which was on the boat, on the ship toward the end of the movie. And now, the problem we have with the score track, with the score cue itself, with the percussion and everything else, that comes later in the scene. The problem I had is when the music just goes full throttle and these people are still having, they're still talking. You know, they're still having like a dialogue, and the music's just like, you know, going crazy with the synthesized beats and everything else. It's like, it's not really fitting. It's like he should have still been building up.
Right.
Not just going straight into the, you know, action and stuff. And that to me was a little hard to deal with.
Right. And I had an issue with the trio when they split up. So, you know, there was a part in the movie where one of them took the Declaration of Independence.
Oh, that's the,
And one of them took the glasses.
Right.
And the real Declaration of Independence. I had an issue with the music there because, you know, it was a typical chase, as always, typical chase music. And then they went overboard with the percussion. It just started to go crazy. And yeah. I'm like, whoa, this is way too much. And granted, I know that, you know, they were running and they were trying to get away from, what's his face?
Sean Bean.
I was thinking Mr. Bean. No, Sean Bean.
Technically, he is Mr. Bean.
Right?
Yeah. You know, I wonder if he gets called it. Mr. Bean. Yep. I really am curious now. I just want to go on Twitter, talk to Sean Bean. Sir, do you get called Mr. Bean a lot?
Do you tell funny jokes?
Do you say good night, Teddy?
Do you have a teddy bear named Teddy?
We have issues.
Anyway, I felt like they could have toned it down just a little bit. You know, and the major issue that I have with all of these chase scenes and all this action music is that, to me, it felt generic.
Yeah, now that is like a lot of the things I am hearing about the score, that they're saying that it was very generic. Now, one place I really expected him to just go completely overboard with was the ending where they're in the shaft and everything else, and, you know, boards are going crazy, and he didn't. The drums did not go crazy, and I was like,
no.
What?
Yeah, it's funny because it's like he hits it full throttle, And then at the very end, he kind of tapers it off. Which it fades out.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, okay. It was still a fun score, and there was a lot of moments where it did work for the film, but there was also a lot of moments where it was like those synthesized beats just come at you full throttle, right? You hit you in the face and everything else.
And you're like, done, you know, yeah, it could have been done
a little bit different. It could have been, you know, slowly built up a little bit more. I wonder if it was a case of he just didn't have a whole lot of time to work on it.
And maybe
he had, like, you know, only like a couple of weeks to work on it.
And it's cookie cutter in places. You know, I would have liked to have heard a little bit of variety. You know, you can't tell me that you come from Hans Zimmer's group and not be able to take some of, you know, some of his tricks you know, when he leaves.
Not only that, is there was a lot of people saying that some of the themes in here sounded very reminiscent to Armageddon.
Right, I saw that.
Which I get, that's another Bruckheimer, you know, Michael Bay film, but at the same time, it's like, don't, you know, redo the same thing over and over. So, in preparing to talk about this, I was listening ahead to, like, The Sorcerer's Apprentice. Now, he's got the, you know, the do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do in there, but he mixes it in his own thing, but when it gets to, like, the score, there were moments in there, it almost sounded like National Treasure theme was fixing to come out of nowhere, and it was like, wait a minute here.
Like, why are you doing that,
you know,
dude?
This is a full-on fantasy film. This ain't, you know, Nicolas Cage running around talking about our forefathers, our Freemasons, and everything else.
I'm going to steal the Declaration of Independence. With magic.
Yeah, with magic. But that's what it sounded like, though. It really did sound like the National Treasure theme was fixing to bust out of there, which, I get it. John Turteltaub was the same director, National Treasure and Sorcerer's Apprentice. But, you know, do something different. Change up your routine. And Trevor Rabin, he's a great composer, but there are a lot of times where he gets a little stale. I guess you could say a little generic, which generic works for some instances, but at the same time, eh. But the thing is, I will say this about the score. It's not generic enough to the point where it's forgettable, but it is generic in places where it needs to have something more memorable.
More of a personality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely more of a personality. Yeah. That is something that...
There's no oomph, no feeling. It's just like, okay, pedal to the metal, guys.
Yeah. All right. So I guess we're going to get to our three critiques. Does it work for the film?
Yes and no.
Yeah. Yes and no. I think we kind of...
There are places that it works and there's places that it doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah. And we've kind of talked about that. The places where it does work, especially with like Ben's theme, the big patriotic theme, the driving...
The motif even.
Yeah. Yeah. The piano motif, the Unsolved Mysteries thing, as Leslie says, that works when it comes in there. It adds the mystery. It adds the little bit of curiosity to it. You know, I guess that's still in the vein of mystery, but it adds that to it. It works, but the places where it doesn't is when it just goes full blown overboard with the drum,
chaotic, yes,
with the percussion and the synthesized and stuff like that.
You know, and after learning that they used a full orchestra, I felt like they could have brought that orchestra out a little bit better instead of covering it up with all the synthesized, you know, elements of the guitar pieces.
You know, come to think of it, there's a recent score, Scream 6. I know that was done with a real orchestra. That was Brian Tyler and Sven Faulkner. I'm sorry if I pronounced your name wrong. I do apologize. That was a full orchestra, but there were moments in there I'm like, this sounds very synthesized. And when I say synthesized, if you don't use a synthesized orchestra in the right way, it will sound cheap.
Well, it sounds pitchy. The noise, the instruments, you know, don't sound right. You can tell.
Yeah. And that's one, you know, I get it. It's a big action film. It's got to have all this big percussion and everything else, but
you can do it in a very nonchalant way and actually be more impactful than just throwing notes out there.
Right. Now, and the thing is, Trevor Rabin came back for National Treasure 2 and the TV series. And I think he might have learned from that, because listening on to the rest of the scores, they're not as big with a percussion like that. They're a little tapered off. They have a little bit more orchestra to it. Especially the second film is just comes out swinging with a solo violin and everything else. It sounds great. And then there's a Paris, you know, accordion coming in there. It was really cool. Now the second question, what is your favorite score piece or moment in the film?
So my favorite moment in the film is at the very end when they find the treasure room and he lights it up.
And oh, when with he the puts torch?
The torch on yeah. the oil and it lights up the whole treasure room. To me, that is just amazing. But it also correlates to my favorite score piece, which is the last piece of the soundtrack, which is Treasure.
Yeah.
I love that piece. And it's totally different than the other pieces, you know, in the ensemble, because it's not chase music. It's not fast paced. It actually has a melody. You know, it's very somber sounding. I like it.
Now, the first time I watched the film and watching it just now, it's pretty much every time I watch it, those torches, were you afraid that they were going to burn their faces?
Yes. Especially considering they probably use a bunch of hairspray in their hair before each take. And hairspray is flammable.
Ooh, man.
Kind of like Michael Jackson when his hair went up in flames.
Was that Michael Jackson?
Yeah, it was during a Pepsi commercial, bless his heart.
Oh, and yeah, it was.
He ended up burning himself pretty badly.
Oh,
because the pyrotechnics went wrong.
Yeah, I remember that. Now I feel bad for doing the hee hee. But no, the whole time I was watching that scene, I was just like, dude, that's just like way too close to your face. And then, like, you know, you got old John Voight in there holding the torch, and I'm like, dude, get that away from him. He's gonna burn himself.
You would have found that on a trivia if somebody would set themselves on fire. Yeah.
So, favorite score piece. For me, it has to be the first chase. It's something about the way it starts with just the, you know, the percussion, and then it just ramps up and everything else. And to me, that piece did work well for the first chase. I thought it was fun. And one of my favorite scenes is during that chase is when they're going through the dirt. You get the Russian guy, oh no, and they're going through the dirt ramps and everything else, and then you get the shot inside the van and like everybody's all bouncing around. I thought that was really cool.
You know, one thing that I did like throughout the movie is the smart aleckness of
Riley.
But there at the very end, and I didn't pick up on it until this last time that I watched the movie, one of the henchmen said, nobody ever talks to me that way, because you know, there was some sweet words spoken between Abigail's character and...
Oh, it was when Nicolas Cage kissed Abigail. Right. And he goes, how come that never happens to me?
Yeah, and I'm like, really? You know, you see this tough Benjamin and he says that.
Yeah.
It was pretty funny.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. Riley, I remember on the commentary, the director, I can't remember if it was for the first film or the second one, they said whenever they needed, like, the comic relief, they would just cut to Riley, you know, and like, it's very true, because he's like, you know, what...
Do you know what the preservation room is? A room for jams and jellies?
For delicious jams and jellies? He's like, no. And the scene where his dad's fussing at him and everything else, you know, and what do you have to show for it? Him? And it cuts to Riley sitting there eating a piece of pizza. He's like, huh? You know, it was funny. And
I like those moments in the movie,
too. Yeah. And the second one's full of them. I mean... I want to say the Ferrari that Riley's driving at the end is one of Nicolas Cage's. I could be wrong, but Nicolas Cage is a big...
There is a trivia fact that I didn't mention at the very beginning of this episode. When he wants to see the $100 bill, and he says, here, I'll give you my watch. That watch is worth over $3,000, and he gave it to the girl just for the $100 bill.
The girl is played by Jerry Bruckheimer's stepdaughter.
Right.
Yep. I thought that was pretty cool, too. And I remember because she really showcased the whole whatever, dude. You know, it worked. It worked. So, the third criteria, what could have been done differently?
So, there's a few things that I would have done differently if I was scoring the film. And, of course, we mentioned the very beginning with that first cue piece. when he looks at finds the bell, it was too intense. I would have built up to that moment or started the music a little bit before he found the bell instead of just, you know, in your face intensity there. The other things that I would have done was I would have kind of toned down some of the chasing scenes just a little bit and not have it too fast paced, because I feel like it was too fast in some places and too much. Yeah. So I would have kind of, you know, taken some instruments away. I would have toned it down a little bit. And I would have not masked the orchestra as much. I would have let the orchestra, you know, play a big part where there was a balance there. I felt like it wasn't balanced correctly.
Yeah, I agree. I really do. There were a lot of moments where I think the synthesized beats could have been, I don't know, slowly brought in, not just right there in your face. The orchestra, you know, we just talked about, I didn't know that it was a real orchestra. I thought it was synthesized. So that right there should tell you something. So yeah, I mean, overall, we like the score. There are a lot of moments just listening to it on its own could have been like, you know, a little cringy. Watching it with the film, for the most part, yeah, it works. But there are moments where it does kind of take you out just a little bit. Maybe in the you know, when this was released, maybe it worked then. I mean, I'm guessing. Or maybe it was just because we're really trying to critique it. Maybe that's why we're just
noticing.
Maybe it's because
we're really old. We hear things differently now.
Turn that down. That's too much. Get off my lawn.
I don't want to be that person.
We're not. We're already old as it is, so, and we're not that way. So I think we're good.
We're not that old, but I feel old today. I guess it's because I'm tired.
And we're trying to be upbeat for everybody listening, so, and it's just not working. It's really not. We are so tired.
Having a newborn is rough, guys.
It really is.
Rough.
So that's our thoughts on National Treasure. Let us know what you think. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, you know how to find us. Just search Measuring the Score Podcast. You'll find us on there somehow.
What about our email address?
Our email address is still the same, measuringthescore@gmail.com.
Are you looking it up just to make
sure? I am
sure?
Looking that up just
oh,
in case.
Oh, that's so sad.
I know. I know.
Guys, I wouldn't know that. But
it is measuringthescore@gmail.com.
Chris is the tech person.
I am.
I handle the Facebook page.
Look, it has been a year since we've done this, okay? So I think, you know, granted, I think I did pretty good. Measuringthescore@gmail.com.
You did really good because you remembered our three matrix questions.
Well, guys, everybody, we will do better on the next episode, hopefully.
This hasn't been bad.
No, this was fun. It was fun to get back to this. Measuringthescore@gmail.com.
Fantastic. Send us a message. If you want us to cover something, send that to us. We haven't forgotten about the other request. We will eventually weave them in to our seasons. But, you know, if you want to just shout out to us, you can shout out to us on Facebook. I normally man the Facebook page. Chris mans the others. And we'll be, you know, prompt to get back to you.
Yeah. Yeah, it should be fun. You can find us on Twitter @MeasureTheScore, or just go on Instagram and search Measuring the Score Podcast. I'm pretty sure you'll find us on there. We're going to be updating it. You know, I'll try to update them as much as possible. If you send us the shout outs, definitely on Twitter. I'll definitely reach out back to you. And so next episode should be kind of fun too. It's Harry Gregson Williams' score to Unstoppable.
That's a great movie.
That is one of my go-to movies. Now, another go-to movie is Twister. This is like second in line.
This is second best.
Because you got Ready Player One, Twister, and then Unstoppable.
What? Mm-hmm. Ready Player One has surpassed Twister?
Yes,
I'm so
Ready
glad
Player
I'm sitting
One.
Down for that.
Mainly for the one scene with Chucky. Remember when Chucky comes out and, you know, it's like, it's effing Chucky. Oh, it was great. I love that part. And that whole movie is just fun. You can still spot new stuff in
80s
it.
Nostalgia.
Exactly. It works every time.
Uh-huh. You old man.
Well, I think that's about it.
Right.
You got anything?
No.
All right.
That's it.
So, as always, for Measuring the Score, I'm Chris.
And I'm Leslie.
Have a good one.